This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Are we not the bestest of friends already?
Only in media.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the only podcast that knows nothing pairs better with a Friday night than the Stars beating the Avalanche yet again in the Stanley Cup playoffs. It's time to do a little Western Conference Finals bound stargazing. Mark, hello, how are you? Happy weekend.
Hey, it was a great weekend. Started out perfectly. Stars won twice on Friday night. Love it.
I mean, we're going to get into the details, but I just thankful that I am so thankful that that blown call is more than isn't more than just a footnote. I do want to lead off by saying I'm sitting there, Mark, Friday night watching the overtime game. And of course, I came into my fandom when the Stars moved to Dallas. I got caught up in all that Mighty Ducks, the whole typical story. And it honestly was having flashbacks to the old Eddie's Better chant and Mike Keane and the good old days. And I was just thinking, like, from a chanting standpoint, right? Otters better. It's got a ring to it, right?
It works.
It fits. And, you know, with the exception of that one year I don't like to talk about, the Bill Guerin year, don't like to talk about that one. Dallas has enjoyed a pretty good run of Stanley Cup games against the Colorado Avalanche.
You know, there's something for old school Stars fans that where, you know, beating the Avalanche is just very satisfying. And we have the possibility where we could have a beating the Avalanche. I mean, first of all, beating Vegas, everybody is up for that.
Listen.
Then you beat the Avs. But, I mean, we could do the trifecta here because, I mean, if you go way back, beating Edmonton is
it was an annual rite of passage, right?
Right.
The absolutes, right? Dallas beats Edmonton. Edmonton trades somebody important. Repeat the cycle.
Yep.
That's the NHL that I know.
Yeah, I'm good with that. And, you know, I'm kind of glad that this whole, you know, first of all, Marchment having a goal wiped off. Yeah, fine. How many times did we see that this season?
Yeah.
The Duchesne's ass was in the crease is kind of a nice little quote.
We've been saying it on the podcast all year, Mark. You got to know where your butt is. Got to know where your butt is. Stargazing fans, just right now, check, make sure, just know where your butt is.
But yeah, what is it with the Stars in the playoffs and something having to do with the crease, right?
I mean, it's just, I guess karmically, right? You have to say maybe things have leveled out a little bit. Dallas won, which is the most important thing. So we don't want to turn this into a referendum, but like I'm not crazy. That was a bad call, right?
It was one of the more clear how should I say non-goaltending interference calls that I've seen this season. Even take it to the point, you know, you can talk about the crease, even the hit from Makar that supposedly caused all this contact. There really wasn't much contact either. It snagged the stick. I mean, that was it. And it's unclear to me that Georgiev was going to be in a position anyway. The only thing that saved the whole thing, Marchman's shot was actually a lot closer to Georgiev than it could be. He had half of that on the other side where it wouldn't have made
a little bit. He'd have thrown it. But I think you're right. It was real ticky tack. And to me, it gets the real problem to me, Mark, isn't even necessarily that the call on the ice was wrong. It's something that I've noticed across the playoffs so far. And it seems like where we are in the NHL right now with review is that the idea of review is that they're going to support the call on the ice. And the focus is more on how do we make sure we support the call on the ice versus how do we make sure we do the right thing? right? Correct thing, right? Well, let's take morality out of this. And I think the problem was when you have these reviews, they're going into it with the mentality of we can't undercut the official. And from a certain perspective, I understand that, but we've seen some calls this postseason where, and they even in the studio, they were talking about like, this one probably doesn't get overturned regardless of what the call the ref made on the ice. And I kind of think that's a problem.
Well, I don't think it's as bad as football, for instance, where they actually change the way they call things like pass interference because they want to be able to review things.
Yep.
And that ends up slanting the process because then it takes overwhelming evidence to overturn it. And you may not have made that call if you didn't know that there was going to needed to make that call to force a review. This one was just flat out bad. And, the only people I think who particularly like the way this is set up are the officials because they aren't, they're in essence just eliminating the review process.
Yeah. And they know that nobody's making them look foolish overturning their calls on the ice, right? It's pretty, in except rare cases, right? It is very unusual to see the referees make to see the booth come in and significantly alter the call.
Such as like let's celebrate. This is
the key thing, right? Is it doesn't matter. And Mark, that may be the source of frustration, but BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. BetOnline, where the game starts. And we've gotten that out of the way, Mark. Dallas won. It was the right result. The call didn't matter, which is all you can ask. As the aggrieved team, where would you like to begin either diagnosing this game, this series? What's on your mind?
Well, I think one of the interesting things from this game is how the lines ended up shaking up. Mm. And there were some player decisions that Pete DeBoer made for this game that ended up working. And the question is whether this is something that is part of what we may see moving forward, or whether this was a one-game anomaly. And you can take a look at stuff on the back end, something like Alex Petrovic driving.
Start there, right? That's going to be permanent, don't you think?
Well, the problem is, was it Tiffin who said he finally found a way to get Hanley back in the lineup? we were stacking two Hanleys together and we got a Petrovic. But... yeah, the problem is that there was a reason why Hanley was the number seven and that Petrovic was the senior mentor with the Texas Stars. And the foot speed is an issue.
Yep.
And he's just not as good a player as even Joel Hanley was. And that's, I will say, I thought Alex Petrovic had a really good game. I think he was consistent. He got some ice time during regular play, and then DeBoer kind of dropped him into the regular rotation once it got to about 6-7 minutes into overtime.
Yeah, he ended up, I think, with about 16 minutes on the night.
Yeah.
He played something like six and a half, seven minutes in regulation, and then just about doubled that in overtime.
Yeah, but at a certain point, you have to scratch your head and say, we're talking about a third pair where if you have Petrovic and Suter together, that is not much foot speed. And somebody's going to expose that. And the fact that it wasn't exposed against a team like Colorado on Colorado's ice is a minor miracle as far as I'm concerned.
It's a miracle. It also speaks to me to how well Dallas, by the time they got to overtime, Dallas was so dialed in on their team game.
Yeah.
And it was, yes, it's an issue, but when the Stars themselves are being as responsible as they were on the back check, when they're being as responsible as they are getting the puck in deep, right? They weren't, the stuff that will get you killed foot speed wise is the guy that takes an early shot in the cycle, rims it around the boards, and it's a breakout, right? The stuff that gets you killed are the bad pinches, the over-aggressive forward play, the stuff when you're moving kind of too fast for your feet, right? And Dallas was in the ascendancy for most of that period, and they kind of they had so much control that they limited the opportunities for not just Petrick, but any of the defenders to really get stuck in that spot where the game was moving more quickly than the Stars wanted it to.
Yeah, really. And the only time that you saw where things were threatening the other way, there was about a 4 or 5 minute span right there in the middle of the first overtime period where Colorado tilted it back a little bit. But other than that, it was kind of Dallas playbook 101. And it almost seemed like Dallas just had to find a way to score. Or you were just going to get this absolute disastrous goal against the flow of play.
I mean, there were definitely some tendrils of doubt in my mind that were, you know, game one overtime. And it looked very similar to Dallas. Kind of, they took a lead, they got caught, and then you get to overtime, and Dallas is playing. You know, they're looking fantastic, they're looking great, and then all of a sudden, it's in the back of their own net. Right? That was the fear was with Colorado was always that it was going to look like that because they did have that high end talent and they can counterpunch. And the concern was always that there's going to be this sustained pressure, and then boom, it's over.
Yeah.
But yeah. Otter was dialed in, man.
Otter was dialed in. It was, you know, his bounce back ability, I think, it's been documented, and we saw it with our own eyes once again.
There was a really interesting, and it was, oh gosh, I can't remember. It was one of the, this time of year, it was one of the mini podcasts. I don't remember who exactly to credit, but I do want to make clear that this is not my original observation, but it fits. Someone was talking about Stuart Skinner and how he was pulled and how Edmonton went to Picard. And one of the things they mentioned was, And I kind of went back and watched the game and I saw it and I agree, but Skinner's body language after a bad goal. And one of the things they were talking about was as the team in front of him, right? If it's not so much that Tendy gives up a bad one from time to time, it's that when he gives up a bad one and you look back and he looks defeated.
Yeah.
Right. That's when it can impact your mentality. That's what impacts how you're playing on the ice when, you know, whereas to your point, like at this point, right, Otter didn't have a great season start to finish, but it doesn't matter, right? And Otter's let in a couple of bad goals over the course of the postseason and it doesn't matter because, like you said, it's this bounce back ability. There's this, you just know that it's not going to snowball.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that he's going to never give up a goal. And it doesn't mean that Dallas is going to win every game they ever play, but it certainly feels like he's mastered this ability to just like, all right, you got it. You got me. I'm not going to give it to you again. And the team can kind of feed off of that because it's again, these, and we talked about this kind of my concerns leading into the series where this would be almost basketball-esque in these teams trading kind of offensive runs. And you saw that a little bit in games one and two. And then you just didn't, you know, kind of throw out. There was game five where the Avs were playing. You know, you don't want to. It's hard to eliminate an elite team, but Otter was a big part of the fact that even when Colorado scored, Dallas was generally able to keep it from turning into more than just a goal.
Yeah, and which is slightly different because one of the issues that Otter had this year was giving up goals back to back.
Yep.
And allowing teams getting on a run. And that seems to have gone away here with the playoffs.
And there were times he was eyeball to eyeball with Nate McKinnon. You know, tie game, he's making blocker saves on the presumptive MVP. Like this kid is dialed in, man.
Yeah, and the thing is, if nothing else, he exudes confidence. Yep. And being dialed in and exuding confidence just has to be something that builds the team up. Because they know that they have somebody who, even if they make a mistake, it's not going to end up turning into a goal.
And I think it fits with this team's construction too, right? This is a depth team, right? Yep. Dallas is a team that's going to overwhelm you because lines 1 to 4 are dangerous. And when you have the biggest challenge, right, when you go down, when you give up a goal and all of a sudden you're trailing, the biggest challenge is fighting that impulse to try and hero puck your way out of it. Right. All of a sudden, you've got every person on the team looking at that scoreboard thinking, I'm going to be the guy that flips this around. I'm going to be the guy that gets it going. And it can pull you out of your team game and it can wreck your structure. And when you're Colorado and your name's Nate McKinnon, right, or Cale Makar, sometimes that's a feature, not a bug. And you just start, you lean on your horses and you go. But when you're Dallas and your whole gimmick is we're just going to throw it at you and you're going to buckle eventually, then having a goaltender you're comfortable with and you're confident in means that it's easier. And I think Pete DeBoer gets some credit. The veteran leadership gets some credit. I do not think that is any kind of surprise that it was the Sagan, Dadonoff, Ben line that got him going in the third period. But when you're constructed the way Dallas is, oftentimes the best response to adversity is stay in the system, keep the pressure on, they're going to break before you do. And I think we saw that in this series.
I think we saw that in this series. I think we saw that in the Vegas series as well. That's the nature of this beast. And it's not that there's any dependence. You know, if you take a look at the adjustments that that Colorado has made, you know, you break up your big guns, which gives you potentially two scoring lines. Pete DeBoer can just shuffle the deck.
Yeah.
I mean, you could have somebody like, you could have somebody like Dadonov coming off the fourth line, and all of a sudden he's getting minutes with primary scorers. The same could happen with Sam Steele.
And productive minutes. It's not.
Oh, just, absolutely.
These aren't the days when you'd throw Steve Ott up there or, you know, whatever, and just see what happens. Like these are meaningful contributions.
Yeah. I mean, the play that Dadonov made on the goal that Ben scored, that's a high skill play.
Well, in an alternate universe, how many points does Evgeny Dadonov have in this postseason?
Dadonov's such a weird player because he makes plays that he needs somebody who's on his same brain wavelengths in order to make a lot of these plays, because he's the kind of guy who will make a pass through four guys and you just have to know that puck's going to hit your stick and depend on it. Yeah. And that's why a lot of times you'll see Dadonov throw the puck through four guys and there just isn't a stick there. And it ends up, you know, going out of the zone or wherever it ends up.
Well, and I think that plays, I think that's part of why he fits so well with Pete DeBoer, right? Because a lot of coaches don't want their fourth lines playing like that, right? They don't want their third lines playing. A lot of coaches get into that 1-2 check fourth line orthodoxy. And when Dadonov falls out of a scoring line, he still makes those plays. But if his line is not kind of constructed to take advantage of them, though, they're just turnovers. And I think it speaks to, you know, he is such a good system fit for DeBoer, and we see the benefit of that.
Yeah, and if you threw him back on, you know, Cogliano Como line, it would be a disaster.
Well, and there are a lot of coaches that successful or otherwise, like there are a lot of coaches that will bench a fourth liner for trying some of the things that Dadonov does, because again, that's not the job, right? Yep. The job is you get it deep, you keep it on the wall, you pin them in, then you get off the ice and let the, you know, there are a lot of teams that do not give players in the bottom six of the roster the leeway that he gets in Dallas. And we, you know, sometimes that's justifiable, right? There are not a lot of guys like him that can kind of bounce between those two roles, but he's one of them, and Dallas is lucky to have him.
Yeah, and you know that kind of segues me into, you know, let's dissect that game-winning goal a little bit. You have a line now with Marchment, Duchesne, and Joe Pavelski, which is I don't think anybody drew that trio together, right? at any point.
That feels like an overtime NHL playoffs line, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And but you take a look at that little skilled play that Pavelski makes to get the puck over where he knows that Duchesne has cycled back behind the net to open space, and he doesn't even have to look to know that that's where somebody's going to be. Yep. And that's the type of thing that I don't know that line works long term, but that kind of chemistry is pretty cool to watch.
Oh, it's fantastic. And the funny thing for me about that was also I had been, you know, in a text chain with a couple buddies of mine, and we were talking about the game, and I was in the middle of just excoriating Duchesne because I felt like at times this series, some of his lesser he has gone overboard just kind of stick handling and trying to make perfect happen. And that overtime game winner was, you know, I'm in the middle of talking, oh, he's doing too much, he's trying too hard, just, you know, be simple. And, you know, to your point, right? He makes a pretty straightforward swoop around the back of the net. He gets to a scoring area. His line mates get the puck across, and there's nothing fancy to that goal. He makes sure that it's loaded on his stick, and he hits a place where the goalie isn't, and Dallas advances in six.
Yeah,
I like exactly. The line combination. I think it's a good with, you know, Duchesne and Marchment. And Marchment has been better, I think, than people realize defensively this season. He has been a plus contributor on that end of the ice. But I think with Duchesne's ability to kind of one-man ability to kind of lead the rush and Marchment's ability to just create chaos, I think that's a line, at least in the short term, that can take advantage of Pavelski's strengths while offsetting some of his weaknesses and getting things like the game-winning goal. I mean, you were talking, though, about you don't think it would work consistently. Is that so?
Consistently. I'm concerned about the defense out of that line.
Yeah.
So I don't know that I need to break that down a whole lot. There are some speed issues. There are some consistency issues. You know, Marchment is fine in certain spots, but part of what makes Marchment dangerous with that line is he cherry picks, and Pavelski's not fast enough to keep up with defenders who are coming in hard, and then Duchesne's kind of a wild card. I don't know that Duchesne's ever been extremely known for his defense. I don't think he's terrible, but his skill set is not on the defensive end.
No,
and I think ultimately a good team exposes that. But in a little line shuffle game, I worked fine.
Well, and I think that's where, you know, coaching and other aspects come into play. You can probably with, you know, and I need to double check. I don't remember who he was out there with, but with Dallas's top four, right, you can probably get away with that a little bit more when you've got guys like Tanev and Lindell and Harley and Haskinen on the back end. You can maybe get away with it a little bit more. And I also, this is where I think that DeBoer to some extent was reading the series. Like I believe that the minutes, the usage was beginning to matter towards the tail end of this series, in particular that overtime. And I think that once you get into second OT and once the, you know, it's a 90 minute hockey game, right? Once you get into that, the foot speed thing becomes a little bit less pronounced because the guys that can take advantage of it are a little bit gassed, right? Everything slows down a little bit. And I think that in those situations, again, it's a gamble, right? But I think in those situations, the type of skill that, you know, the Pavelski, Marchment, Duchesne trio brings maybe is a little bit safer almost because nobody's really flying at 100%.
Yeah. Well, and it also opens up those other lines. And I mean, here, you know, big caveat. This is all related to the fact that the Stars don't have Rupa Hintz in the lineup. And so shuffling is out there, but you have to like, you know, Robertson with Wyatt Johnston and Logan Stankoven.
Oh, I mean, man.
Oh, now that's a line I could get used to.
I mean, I hope that is a line we will get used to as Stars. Yeah. That, to me, that's a future, you know, oh my gosh.
That's a future top line right there.
Yeah. It's a current top line.
Well, true. And then, I mean, what can you say? You take a random Russian and put them with Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin. They've been doing this their entire career together.
That's right. That is absolutely right. And it's just been it worked. I kind of wanted to talk about somebody else, Mark. And you know, we've been through in the last couple playoff cycles, this talk about whether or not certain guys can adapt to certain situations. And oh, look here, Jason Robertson is the leading forward on the Stars in terms of points. He's got 12, one behind Miro Heiskanen, and he was only
all assists.
And he was the important thing to me is how many games in the Colorado series was Jason Robertson held without a point?
Zero.
No, he didn't have anything in the final game.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Yep.
But that's it. He had an assist
in game. That broke his streak because he had an assist a game for six straight games, I think, was it?
Yep.
Maybe seven.
And then he had, including two assists in game five and two assists in that huge game four.
Yeah.
And I think it's, you know, the first year, right? The people dusted off the old playoffs are different narrative to talk about how, you know, Jason Robertson needed to find ways to change his game. And honestly, one of the most valuable things in the postseason is that consistency. And guess what, man? He is just automatic almost. He's generating a couple of points a night and just doing his job as the focal point of this offense, and just had a low key because it's assists, right? It's 3 goals and 9 assists at this point, but he's having a heck of a playoff run all of a sudden.
Well, and that's an interesting point, because if you take a look at what was said about Jason Robertson in the playoffs the previous years, there were really two things that came to mind. One, people would call him soft. And I don't know that I ever really bought that narrative. He's 6'3", plays a pretty physical game, even though he's a skilled guy, so you don't necessarily expect that. But he's
when you have the puck all the time, you don't hit guys, right?
Well, but Robertson actually does now. So he's up that a little bit. But the other thing that was always the gotcha for Robertson was that he was getting his shot blocked.
Mm-hmm.
And by becoming a playmaker, that kind of goes away. And I think if people start viewing him as a playmaker, it turns around and then opens the shot back up. So it's win-win. And so by going to the being kind of a pass first guy, maybe, it'll improve things down the line, because then he'll have that dual threat, and you won't necessarily just be able to take his lane to the net away.
Yeah, it's all about that versatility. And then it makes him, if he's enabling linemen, it's exactly what you said, right? All of a sudden you can't focus on him the same way, because take the shot away, right? Guess what happens? He's going to, you take his shot away, and all of a sudden you finish the series and he's got, 8 points in a six game series. And okay, great. He didn't score any goals, right? Congratulations.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like everybody else. You keep waiting for the guys to show up, and it's like, oh, Pavelski doesn't have a goal. Pavelski scores a goal, and Duchesne's been having trouble scoring. Duchesne is the one who puts them into the Western Conference Finals, and that's the beauty of this. Any guy can step up at any moment. Type of team that Dallas has developed.
And it helps offset some things, right? So Wyatt Johnston and he was fantastic in the series. So this isn't that. But with the exception of a 3-point game three, he had 2 goals and an assist in game three. Wyatt Johnston didn't register a point in any other game in this series. He played fine, but it didn't matter, because to your point, you got contributions from Duchesne, you got contributions from Pavelski, Jason Robertson picked it up a little bit. All of a sudden, guess who is leading the Stars in points? It's our boy on the back end, Miro Heiskanen, has 13 points in 13 games, 5 goals and 8 assists. So it's again, we're talking about, think of just running down, and this is just even in my brain, right? Like Logan Stankoven had a critical goal. Jamie Benn had a critical goal. Tyler Seguin had a critical goal. Duchesne, all of these. The list of guys that are doing important things offensively is expansive. Yeah, Radek Foxa has scored a critical goal this postseason, and that's why this team is heading into the Western Conference Final. It's fantastic.
Well, it's a beauty, because you can't just say, I'm going to shut down this piece. You don't have these conversations about Tanev and MacKinnon and how that's working out and who's shutting down or what's the strategy to shut down Makar. Yeah, you can have that conversation, and maybe you can take 3 guys out of their game because you're focusing your best team them up. But then you have these other 9 guys out here who have the ability to take over games just the same way. And if you don't focus on them.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can't, and that's how Dallas gets you. And that's why I think they've, they wore down Vegas. They wore down Colorado. You just can't, it is so difficult to see one line after the other coming over the boards, and how you never get that break with the trio that probably isn't going to do anything.
Yeah. Edmonton would be interesting for a next series. I think they're going to run into some serious issues with the depth. Vancouver is a different beast. I think they're probably better defensively. We'll see what's going on with this Brock Besser situation. He's missing game seven with blood clots, which occurs with him. But that team may be a little more scary for Dallas, especially showing how successful they've been over the last couple of years against the Stars. But
yeah,
either
Quinn
way,
Hughes, right? He's definitely troublesome.
Yeah,
he's a guy that can make some things happen. The goaltending is interesting, regardless of which team advances.
I've actually watched both Picard and Seelovs in person probably 4 or 5 times this year in AHL arenas.
Yeah. Well, and there's rumor that Demko, if Vancouver advances, Demko might be an option again, and that could be very, you know, very, very interesting to see how Vancouver navigates that particular issue if it pops up.
Yeah, it's coming back from injuries into the fire as a goaltender, you better make sure you're 100%.
Yeah.
And to tell you the truth, Seelovs has looked pretty good. He's not the weak link. Edmonton goaltending situations. I mean, that's kind of, you look up goaltending problems in the dictionary, right? And there's the oil.
Yeah, but it's interesting though, because the counterpoint to all of that is I think their power play is almost 50% effective. They've got Connor McDavid in all of his glory and Leon Draisaitl as well. They finally added some scoring depth, and they've got Kane and they've got Nugent Hopkins and Bouchard's having a heck of a year on the blue line. So they are more than just Connor McDavid and friends, but there are still some things that aren't ideal from a roster management perspective.
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping it's Edmonton, first of all, because of the goaltending situation, but also because I just find fascinating the Haskinen McDavid situation. And I think it would be interesting to watch, you know, how Dallas put together this strategy with having Tanev with McKinnon. And I think that kind of flops around if you see the Oilers out there. I think it ends up being Haskinen and McDavid because they bring different defensive skill sets to the game.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. Although the way the season Tanev is, postseason Tanev is having right now, it is one of my favorite plays was, and they showed it ad nauseum, is, you know, it was McKinnon beat him wide, right? Beats him clean, but Tanev is so, he has the presence of mind. Instead of chasing McKinnon along the wall, he just goes right back into his spot in the middle. You know, he kind of takes the shortcut to the front of the net, and it must have been it's kind of McKinnon's series in a microcosm of it is he beat Chris Tanev wide, right? He threw a stutter step on him, beat him wide, got Tanev unbalanced on his skates, got past him. And it didn't matter because by the time he could get around him and start moving towards the net, Tanev had recovered and was in position to turn into a poke check. And it's kind of the hallmark of being dialed in, right? It's when you're playing well, you don't get beat. When you're playing really well, you don't get beat even when you get beat.
Even when you do get beat, yeah.
And it must have been so demoralizing to be past the defenseman and then have the guy that you just beat poke check the fuck off your stick. It's interesting. Let me ask you this. How concerned are you?
I was going to ask a question.
Oh, please.
I get to do that once in a while.
That's right. Absolutely.
So where would you rate this season run in relation to other Dallas Stars playoff runs? How confident are you of this getting a little further?
I am so jinx and whammy averse. You've put me in a very difficult spot, but I'm going to give you an honest answer, right? This reminds me, with the exception of, there was about a 5-minute stretch after Dallas, after the Marchment goal was waved off, where part of my sports-addled brain was conjuring up how perfect and crappy it would be to watch Dallas score a perfectly good goal and then lose it in overtime to go to game. Like there was a little whisper in my head, but honestly, when they lost game 5, my panic level was 0. This team has been good now for a couple of seasons and they've played well. This team reminds me of the 90s when Dallas was an elite team and they did elite team things. I was thinking about this actually. Are you familiar at all? And it's a bad movie, but it's a great graphic. Are you familiar at all with Watchmen, Mark?
I am not. No.
All right. Well, there's a sequence where the Batman analog, named Rorschach, anyway, he gets arrested. They take him to prison, and he's in prison in the commissary, and all the guys are yelling at him because he arrested a lot of them. And you know, all the criminals are like, you're in here with us. We've got you, buddy. And he takes this vat of boiling water and just throws it over a guy. And as the guards are like breaking up the scuffle and dragging him out of there, Rorschach just screams at him, you know, I'm not trapped in here with you. You're trapped in here with me. And I was kind of thinking about our pre-series casts against both Colorado and Vancouver. And one of the questions we were asking, and I think is as kind of jilted fans coming out of the era that we came out of, you know, there's a part of us that's like worried about the Stars and going in every series, think about how it could go wrong. And I think that I'm finally, and this isn't to say that I'm, you know, ever going to lose the random burst of pessimism, but like other teams are afraid of Dallas, right? Like this is no longer a plucky Anton Khudobin inspired bubble cup run, right? This is no longer a team that is kind of riding waves and riding one line. Like this, they were better roster wise than Las Vegas, and they were better roster wise than Colorado, and they beat both of those teams and they deserve to, right? And that doesn't mean that they're going to beat Edmonton, and it doesn't mean that they're going to beat Vancouver, but they're probably going to be the favorite in the conference finals, and they probably deserve to be, and they should probably win. And that's a very different thing saying than they will win, right? Because I think both Vancouver and Edmonton are good enough to beat the Stars in the same way that, hey, it took seven games against Vegas and Colorado was close at times, and you know, nothing is given. But this is a team that, like, why not, right?
It's a team, I think, especially since the All-Star break, this is a team that was always, that always had really good parts, and it's gelled as a team in those couple months. And at this point, it's a juggernaut. And the question in my mind is not how far can this team go? It's more along the lines of the competition that they're playing at a certain point, how much do these first two series end up taking out of them?
Yeah.
And that's the biggest concern that I have, is just that, you know, Vegas is an 8 seed going seven games, and then a pretty intense game against what was probably the second best team in the West this year. You know, a little break not having to face Val Nichushkin, but that's a lot of pretty intense, heavy hockey that the Stars have been through, and especially going 5Ds for a lot of it. At a certain point, that'll add up. I'm not so worried about it against either Vancouver or against Edmonton, but I think it worries me more against either Florida or New York.
Yeah, I will say though, right, the scheduling gods gave Dallas a break, and the fact that game one isn't until Thursday, and factor in that the other series is going seven games, they're going to have 6 full days of rest between series. And you know, I'm sure everybody's banged up. Marchment missed a couple, you know, missed some time. Hintz is out right now. But so far they seem to have, you know, Tanev, right, had to have his lips pulled away from his teeth, I think, you know, which,
yeah,
makes me cry hearing about it. But as a hockey player, it's like, yeah, it's fine. It's Tuesday. But it's one of those things, though. I think that so far it seems like they've avoided anything catastrophic, and getting about a week off, and in Hintz's case, getting what it's going to be about 9 days to heal whatever's going on there. Like, yeah, there's a rust versus rest thing, but Dallas loses game one anyways. So I think my concerns about workload so far, I'm feeling pretty good, because even though they've only been playing 5D, the usage across those five has been really level, and nobody's playing insane minutes, and nobody seems, at least right now, to be playing through anything truly debilitating, and they've had a good stretch of rest right now that I think is coming at the perfect time.
Yeah,
you know, two grueling series, a week off, and away you go.
Yeah, and the team got through in a large degree without Roope Hintz contributing, and you know, cross my fingers, it's day to day, but it's playoff day to day, so who knows what that means. But Hintz back would be, how should we say, useful.
And I don't know anything, to be very clear, and not just about hockey, just like in general, I don't know anything, but reading DeBoer's comments, reading some of the other coverage, right, it really does feel like, to your point about confidence and about depth, it really does feel like part of why Hintz hasn't played the last two games was because DeBoer felt like he had the flexibility to give him extra rest, either because he wanted him ready for a crucial game seven, or, you know, and because he knew that the rest of the group was in a position to get the job done without him, at least in the short term. So I am cautiously optimistic that with Hintz, it's one of those things where DeBoer looked at the schedule and said, hey, if I sit him in 5 and 6, I can keep him in Dallas. And if it goes well, he gets, you know, almost 10 days off. And if it doesn't go well, I can still pull him back onto the ice with, you know, 5 or 6 days, you know, with 4 or 5 days in game seven. Right. So I'm cautiously optimistic that Hintz was, we're up in the series. We look fantastic. I trust this roster. I can take a risk with a little extra rest versus, you know, if we'd been in a situation where, you know, of years past, that's maybe, you know, maybe you force him to go when you don't have the rest of the roster moving.
Right. No, I think that makes sense. And I think my primary point is just that against Vancouver and Edmonton, you talk about, you know, players' abilities against certain schemes and against certain teams. I think Hintz's game is a major bonus for the Stars in matchups against either one of those teams.
Yeah.
So, and so I think it's maybe more important to have him available in the Western Conference Finals than it was necessarily against Colorado.
I mean, in talking about Edmonton, right, you're talking about the Miro-McDavid matchup. Well, Hintz is a part of how this team, he is an elite defensive forward as well, right? So a big part of how this team plays defense against the league's big guns is Rupe Hintz. So yeah, they're going to need him. I am cautiously optimistic that they're going to have him and he's going to be in good shape to go. And that, like I said, I think that if it had been 3-2 Colorado, I don't think Hint sits. I think this was a case of Dallas put themselves in a position where they could get one of their big guns a little bit of extra help. And I know we're getting up on time, right? But I think that I have been so impressed with DeBoer's coaching over the course of this postseason, and in part, you know, the way that he has managed this roster, the way that he has been, in my opinion, with the forwards, the way that he has stuck with things when they needed to be stuck to, and then varied them when they needed to be varied. I cannot be more impressed with how he's done. And even, you know, even the Lundqvist stuff, like, I think he did a good job. If you concede that it was never going to be Lundqvist, I even think he did a good job pulling in Petrovic and using him in a double overtime game in a way. Again, look at the ice time for the guys on this team, and it's still not crazy, right? Yeah. Like, nobody is doing anything. You know, Miro played 38 minutes in a triple overtime game, right? Like, he played 27 in game 5, 26, 25, 24. Like, that's just, he's playing Miro number numbers, one defenseman minutes.
Yeah. And here, I mean, this is a celebration cast, and I think we're celebrating in a way that kind of, and you know, I'm pretty confident with this team.
Yeah,
it's, you know, Vegas and Colorado was a gauntlet. Team got through. I have a high level of confidence that whether it's Vancouver or Edmonton, that this team will put itself in a position to win that series as well. Yep. And so you don't necessarily hit your 100% high because there's more work to be done. And that's kind of the way I feel about this team, right?
Yeah. And you always, to me, we've talked about this in previous podcasts, right? I always look at this in terms of, okay, looking at Dallas's success, what about this success is either unusual or not repeatable, right? Because that's when you worry, is when stuff is going on. Some fourth liner has 20 goals, right? It's you look for the crazy, and that usually tells you to worry, because, you know, if Sam Steele had
crazy doesn't happen all the time.
Exactly. But you look at this team's successful regular season, 820 goal scorers. Mark, if you look at the goal totals right now, you have Wyatt Johnson leads the team with 7. Heiskanen has 5. And then literally everybody else on the roster, it feels like, has 3, right? Robertson has 3. Ben has 3. Sagan has 3. Dadonoff has 3. Stankoven has 3. Hintz has 2. Duchesne has 2. Pavelski has 1. Steele has 1. Marchman has 1. Suter has 1. Lindell has 1. Like, it's one, you know, obviously Delandria has a goal. Foxa has a goal. Like, the only, you know, it's like Tanev, Craig Smith, and Thomas Harley, honestly, are the
Harley's the one that's kind of the exception there, because you'd expect a goal from him.
You would, but my point being that, like, this team is winning in the exact same way that they've been winning all season. So it strikes me as like, what is going to suddenly change that's going to turn this team into a pumpkin, right? And okay, you take the number one center away. They went 1-1 without Hintz, right? okay, you don't want to do that for a whole period. So it's getting into, like, I think your point about confidence, like, if they continue to play like they're playing, this is no longer Dallas having to run a gauntlet. Like, Dallas is the Minotaur. Edmonton or Vancouver, right? They're trapped in here with us, right? We're not trapped in here with them.
And I'm interested to see what people who know those teams better than I do have to say about how they're going to go about beating the Stars, because I think it's a difficult challenge.
It's certainly something that you know, a couple of great teams have been unable to figure out so far, and you have to like where everything is right now as a Stars fan. I like where we're at.
I love it.
Any final thoughts, Mark?
I'm looking forward to seeing who we're going to play on Thursday, and then a few nice relaxing days. I'm sure my wife will appreciate me not glued to the TV in the evening all the time for a break.
Same. And then the only other thing I want to shout out is we've gotten the best version of Jamie Benn so far, is all of the physicality, timely scoring, and none of the stupidity. So go Stars.
Love it.
All right. Well, thank you as always, Mark. KT, thanks for doing the hard work on the back end. This has been Stargazing, presented by Bet Online. Podcast over.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.